Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, September 16th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 68. My name is Rob. Sitting there across from me is Jason.
Hey!
Hey!
It's Groundhog Day!
We've been having a heck of an evening here. This is the third time we've tried to record this. The first time, acid crashed. The second time, and that first time we were maybe 10 minutes in?
Yeah, about 10 minutes in.
Yeah, the second time, the whole computer went blue screen of death on us. That was about another maybe 7 or 8 minutes in.
Yep.
So here we go, try number 3. We're not even using the computer this time.
Straight into the handheld recorder now.
Right, which we don't think can screw up.
No, it never has screwed up for us.
Right, it's been extremely reliable.
Compared to everything else we've used, this is the only thing that's got a flawless record.
Right.
Except, we just double-tested it. Hey, you put the SD card back in, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, no, we're good there. It's not just recurring to internal memory or something.
Which probably run out in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, should we have deleted stuff from the SD card?
We'll be fine.
Okay, all right.
I hope.
Oh, boy. Well,
If it gets full, it'll still have saved what we've already recorded, which is better than any program has done for us today. So,
right. Yeah, we're having a hard time. Okay, so this beginning intro here is not going to be nearly as spontaneous as it was the first two times. So we apologize for that. Okay, first thing I want to do, since I'm not being spontaneous, is plug Grand Con, because I need to make sure I do that, because that's this weekend.
The last time you were spontaneous, it was great.
Yeah.
You had a little story you told.
Right.
And
it was like, there were some jokes in it. It was, you know, whole, you know, callbacks.
Frankly, it was some of the best content we've ever had.
It was, and then it's lost to the ether.
Lost forever.
Once and for all.
Hey,
so,
try not to punch the handheld
right,
recorder.
I'm
going to
stop
hand.
Waving my arms around. Yeah. I'm a hand talker, you know?
I know.
Grand Con is this weekend at the Prince Conference Center in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This coming weekend, which is the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, it's an exciting games comic book convention. Jason and I are going to be there. Come and say hi. Play test some of our games. Get some free dice. It's going to be awesome. So if you're in the Southwest Michigan area, come to Grand Con. Grand-con.com. It's going to be awesome.
Gonna be awesome.
Gonna be so great. We're really excited that we're gonna have a home con, you know?
Yeah.
It's like 40 minutes away from us. It's gonna be fantastic. So we're really, really excited. What else do we need to talk about?
I think this is a point in the last two episodes where you say, Hey, Jason, what you been playing? And then I say, well, Rob, actually, you and your wife came over to my house recently, and my wife, we played Kanzumi Goddess.
Oh, yes.
Hey, can I hear the story again?
Again?
The whole intro story that you tell about this? Because I love it.
I'll streamline it for you this time. But for the people out there who haven't who are not long-time listeners know the story already. But anybody new to the show here, let me give you the basic rundown. About a year ago, a game called Kanzumi Goddess was on Kickstarter, and I immediately took offense to it because it's a deck building game, all the artwork is mostly naked anime girls. Okay,
very mostly naked,
very almost naked anime girls, and that, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's your thing, good for you. That's great. No judgment there. What made me angry about it is that they pretended they were selling a game. And what I submitted is that they are not selling a game. They're selling softcore porn, and they're putting that wrapped around a basic game so they can get it on Kickstarter and get some money for it.
Right.
That was my objection and my anger with it.
So our fear was that, I mean, just to sum it up, our fear was they put a bunch of dirty pictures on some cards and called it a game.
Right. Right, and it was a bad game.
Right.
And that made me angry. And I kind of have been ranting about this game for some time. But I started to feel guilty about it because I've never actually played the game. And it's not fair of me to criticize a game without having played the game. That's not fair.
Right.
And I tried to always be critical of it in terms of how they were advertising, how they're selling it, how they're presenting it to their audience, which is really what was making me angry. But I decided in the end it wasn't fair for me to be so vehemently opposed to it without having actually tried it.
And that's fair. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I have an obligation socially and morally and all that stuff to, you know, to give them a fair shake. I need to do that. And so before we went to Gen Con, I said, hey, if I can find a copy of the game for $20 or less at Gen Con, I will pick it up and try it, because I owe that to the people who made the game. I owe that to the audience, to be honest.
Right.
And we got to Gen Con, it was $40.
Yep.
So I said, nope, I'm not spending $40 on that. And then our one of our favorite listeners, one of our favorite fans, Mr. Neil Roberts, who's a big old jerk face, said, "Hey, Rob, I'll take up a collection and pay for half of it so that you don't have to spend more than $20. And guess what he did? He collected $20 from different donors and gave it to me. And so I didn't have a choice. I had to buy a copy of the game.
Yep.
Yep. So we played it. You and me and our wives played it, and we did not record that. We didn't want to.
Nope.
Nope. First things first, so we should talk about this.
Yeah.
So first things first, the artwork is softcore pornography.
Yeah, I mean, the artwork is exactly what you thought you were paying for if that's why you bought the game. Exactly. So good news for you.
Good news.
If you bought the game to get that, and I'm going to guess most of our listeners don't fall into that category of... If they were going to buy something like that, they certainly wouldn't make it be a game. They would just go buy what they wanted.
Well, right, yeah.
I mean, what's the point? So, one of the first things I noticed when you opened it up is there is a advertisement for another one of their games called Tanto Core.
Yeah.
Which is basically a big Nazi symbol.
It was, actually, I think there were two different games in their advertising.
But the one is basically a big Nazi symbol.
No, that was Barbarossa was the Nazi symbol.
Okay.
Tanto Cure was
but
their
the Barbarossa, does it have a picture of...
It has Nazi, stuff on the back.
It's got Nazi stuff on it, but it's also got, of course, an anime girl who's mostly naked.
Right.
So now we're capitalizing on World War II for that, so even better, guys. Way to go.
Yeah, so, you know, there's some questionable themes already with whatever organizations put together. The American publisher is Japanime Games. I'm not sure exactly who the original Japanese publisher is, because I'm pretty sure this is an English reprint of a Japanese game. So at any rate, that was a little off-putting to open the box open the can, and that'd be the first thing that you see. But, okay, well, let's talk about the game. All right. It's a deck builder.
Yes.
Does it succeed as a deck builder?
It succeeds as a not very good deck builder.
Okay.
It was not completely unfun. I will say that it was better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
there were some intricacies to it that surprised me. And I can say that, your wife and I were on a team, randomly happened.
It's a team-based game. If it's two-player, it's one-on-one. If it's four-player, you can't play with three. So if it's four-player, it's two-on-two. You can play six-player, three-on-three.
Right. Yeah. And there were a couple of weird rules that didn't really make sense to me. Mm-hmm. But the main gist, your wife and I are on a team, and when we won, I wanted to win because I wanted to win the game, not just because I was like... I want to win to end this game. At the beginning, my goal was to just make the game end.
Yeah.
And the card I took, the god that I had was Loki, because he's a Norse god. And the idea was that that would make the game end faster. And I don't know if it did or not. But I wasn't completely like, oh, this game is terrible. Mm-hmm. The graphic design and layout is really difficult to read.
Yeah.
And the font is small.
Yeah.
And the... To me, the rules, the descriptions of things you could do felt like a first draft. When I write my first draft on a proto, it's usually really wordy, and it feels like they never cut it down. They never send it to somebody like Grant Rohde. You can say, hey, Grant, can you make this shorter and more concise?
Well, let's step back for a second. The basic setup of the game is that it's Greek gods versus Norse gods, okay? And one team are the Greek gods, and the other team are the Norse gods. I don't really care about the fiction that they had built around how Greek and Norse gods are fighting each other. I'm not interested in that. Whatever.
Did they even put fiction in there for that?
No.
Okay. We didn't read it.
Somewhere in the back, in somewhere out there in the world, there is some kind of fiction that has been developed to work around that. I don't care. Each player then picks one god, and there's a main god and a secondary god for each team. Okay.
And we both played the main gods. Yeah, the secondary.
Right. And the way to win the game is to knock out your opponent's main god.
Right.
Who has hit points. Okay. And then each god has special powers that they can use or not use based on the situation of the game. And then you have minions, basically. Lesser gods or deities that you buy. That's what you're buying as the deck building part to put into your deck to do different things for you, either to attack other gods or defend against other people's attacks. So it's kind of got an act and react option. Sometimes right. you're playing a card down there to take an action to attack somebody or to discard a card or draw additional cards or whatever. Sometimes you have a react ability to defend against somebody else's attack. Or if they're attacking, you can play a react that will allow you then to counterattack them.
Right.
Which is, it's kind of a neat idea.
The dual use of cards was cool like that.
Yeah.
It took us a while to figure out that that's what you were supposed to do.
And that's because the rules were written so poorly.
Right.
Right. And there was a whole feature of the game, something about putting things into the netherworld that didn't even happen in the whole game. And in fact, I had the god that I had picked was Hades, who had two special powers that allowed me to manipulate things when minions were put into the netherworld. And at no point in the game did any of us really have the opportunity to put stuff into the netherworld or really understand why that would be useful.
Right. So towards the end, I was putting some things in the netherworld.
I think you did that once, and then you won on the same turn.
Yeah, and the only reason I did it is because it helped me win the game.
Right. Yeah, so that was a whole feature of the game that didn't even come up, and we are not sure how we missed that, or how taking advantage of that could have changed the game experience.
I was thinking the move I did at the end, where I trashed, basically, because the Netherworld is kind of like trash,
yeah.
except for some people can manipulate it.
Yeah.
By some people, I mean just the god Rob was using.
Mm-hmm. But also not like trash. It's like kind of an open netherworld area that anybody can see and anybody might be able to take cards
right.
from.
It's like a shared trash kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things, your guy could do things with that when warriors are going in the trash, and that one warrior, Fierce Star, I think, had the ability to throw things in the trash, or in the netherworld. So I think there might have been a combo there we were missing.
Mm-hmm.
But again,
yeah.
it was overly I'm just saying that if you are the type of person that's looking for a game with a bunch of anime naked chicks on it, you probably don't want a game that's this complicated.
You know, no, I disagree. Because I think if you're looking for a game that has a bunch of naked anime chicks on it, this is one of your few options. And this, once you take the time to learn all the rules, I think this could actually be maybe a fun game to play. It's not a bad game.
Yeah, it's not a bad game.
No.
It's poorly written, but it's not a bad game.
The rules are poorly written. The card layout, like you said, is really bad. The card layout is there to feature the artwork, and the card text and card powers are secondary to the portraits.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, okay.
There's also a chaining thing you can do, like kind of like a Nightfall.
Like Nightfall, right.
And that actually worked okay. I got to do it like twice, and it was exciting when I did it. Because, I mean, I'm not a fan of Nightfall, but when I did it, it was very exciting.
You know, that's a good point. Well, I played this once, and I played Nightfall once. I think I had more fun playing this than with Nightfall. With this,
I would actually agree.
I managed to chain cards together 3 times in this game, and when playing Nightfall, I was not successful doing that even one time, because nothing would ever work together. But I think neither one of us really likes Nightfall.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad game. It's just not my type of game.
It never clicked for us.
Yeah.
So, all right. So kind of to narrow this down, Kanzumi Goddess, here's my feeling about it, okay? Kanzumi Goddess is not a bad game. It's a really straightforward, simple, by-the-numbers deck-building game, okay? I don't think it brings anything really new or innovative to the table.
I think it was trying to with the Netherworld thing.
He was making an effort, but it kind of fumbled that a little bit. Or maybe it's the fault of the rules for fumbling that. I mean,
yeah,
but that is part of the
really
game.
Cool,
you know, right. But so that said, so I don't think it's anything innovative or new or different or particularly exciting. It doesn't mean it's not. It can't be fun. But my original hypothesis was that they are not selling the game based on the game. They're selling this product based on the anime boobs. And I feel comfortable saying that I was right about that.
Yeah. So I want to say 2 things in regards to that. I'll start with agreeing with you. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. What really frustrated me was that it was about Norse and Greek gods.
Yeah.
Which had nothing. The artwork does not lend itself to that at all. I mean,
no,
the artwork,
silly.
Like, if you're going to do like anime style, make it about like some mystical Asian thing, right? Like something where maybe that, like, but actually taking like 2 things that are pretty, you know, people enjoy pretty much, Greek and Norse gods, and then doing artwork that has nothing to do with them. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it was...
They were just names. It was almost as if the game in Japan was some other theme, and in the translation to it to English, they just slapped those labels onto it.
I wonder if that's true.
They may have.
And it's... That made me mad more than anything, and I'm not even, like, a big fan of Greek mythology and Norse mythology, but I know that there are a lot of people that are.
Yeah.
And, like, we're gonna... The other sad thing was we had no idea that that was the case. And then, yeah, and then the Zodiac is in there, too.
Yeah,
which is something else a lot of people are big fans of.
Right.
And, like, most of the naked chicks are, you know, different signs of the Zodiac.
Right.
One good thing I want to say about the game, as poorly written as the rules were, I feel like they knew that, because they made this huge glossary where every term in the game is listed in this big glossary, and it was super, super helpful.
Yeah.
So I give them credit for being like, our rules are so bad, we need this huge glossary. Yeah.
It was a third of the rule book was that glossary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the only thing I looked back in, and I looked at it probably four or five times in the game, and I was able to clarify things for us.
Okay.
Like first couple turns we weren't using my boss's power like we were supposed to be, and I was like, oh guys, sorry, we're supposed to be using this god's power to do this. And
so anyway,
yeah,
so Kanzumi Goddess, it was not nearly as bad as we expected it to be. I mean, the game ended up, despite our best efforts, we had fun playing it.
Yep.
But because of the subject matter, neither one has any interest in playing it again.
No.
And frankly, I mean, there are many other deck builders out there that are far better.
Yes.
Far better. So, you know, rousing endorsement of the game, let's remind everybody about our contest.
Yeah, let's.
Our fan name contest featuring Kanzumi Goddess. Last week, just off the cuff, decided to announce a contest, and we're sticking to that. We want to know what to call our fans, you know? Fans of Star Trek are Trekkers. Fans of Doctor Who are Whovians. We need a name for fans of building the game. We've already gotten some great suggestions, and that's been a lot of fun.
Yep.
Send us your suggestions, and the one we pick, we will send them our copy of Kanzumi Goddess.
We will.
Okay, that is your grand prize.
We'll even throw in some BTG dice for you.
Yeah, just because we're nice dudes.
We want to double the value
right, of
awesomeness.
and I propose, tell me if you disagree, Jason, I propose that our deadline is, do you want to do October 1st?
Let's do October 1st.
Okay, so October 1st is our deadline. So get your submissions into us by October 1st. We will review them, and then on a show shortly thereafter, I'm not sure how our recording schedule is going to work out, but on a show shortly after that, we will announce the winner, and we will send you your copy of Kanzumi Goddess, our favorite anime boob game.
And let's say October 1st by 5 p.m. EST.
By 5 p.m. EST.
Because we're probably going to be recording that night.
Oh, you're right.
So we could actually finish reviewing them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you've got an idea and you're like, I feel like somebody probably already sent that, send it anyways.
Yeah.
We're keeping track of the order we get them
in. We sure are.
And the first person to send a certain idea, you know, if we pick one, they're going to be the winner. Obviously,
yep.
We only have one thing to send.
Yep.
But, you know, don't be worried about duplication. Mm-hmm. We've already got some really good ones, mm-hmm. and I'm sure there's a lot more really good ones out there. So.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to be silly, because we're not afraid of being silly.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. So yeah, so we need a better name for this contest. The BTG Kanzumi Goddess Giveaway featuring... No, let's just... Maybe just the BTG Kanzumi Goddess Giveaway.
Yeah.
Let's call it that.
Featuring anime boobs.
I think
that's a given.
Yeah,
it's just implied.
Yeah, right. So so that's kind of what we've been playing together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick, I'll just kind of recap what's been hitting my table recently. We've been playing a ton of Morels.
Yeah, you've been talking about Morels. That a lot.
Man, that game is great. I will talk about that on a future show because we're going long on this part of the conversation already. Playing a lot of Morels, playing a lot more of Phantom of the Opera, which is excellent. And, what else have we been playing? I mean, those are the two big ones since we've been back from Gen Con, and we're just loving the crap out of those. How about yourself?
Other than getting to play this together and then getting to play, what else did we play together?
We played Maelstrom.
Maelstrom, yeah.
Yeah.
We played another game, yeah. Which, by the way, that episode went up last week, the bonus episode of
Yes,
that.
So hope you guys enjoyed that.
If you haven't already checked it out,
Maelstrom,
check it out.
Development on that continues to go spectacularly. Yeah, I will have Maelstrom with me at GrandCon if you guys want to try it.
Nice.
With a better version of it. Better cool. Print and play.
And I will have Sandbox Showdown with me.
Great.
Maybe a rough print and play of something else, but we'll see.
Okay.
So I have to go out of town for a week beforehand, which kind of sucks for work. So, but what I've been playing mostly is, so I recently finally got a PlayStation 3.
I
told you that I told the listeners maybe that I was going to get one here eventually once the price dropped. After the new one came out. So I actually said to you last week, I'm just can't wait till the price drops. And you said, dude, the price already dropped. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
So I went online and got an awesome deal, on a PlayStation 3 with Uncharted 3, which is a super fun game.
Yeah, it's great.
And then in addition to that, it came with a year's worth of PlayStation Plus, which is like $50.
$50 a year. Yeah.
So what's cool about that is, and it's like a 250 gig system that I got as well.
It's awesome.
So it was very exciting. And the PlayStation Plus, you said it was very much worth it.
Yeah, I think so.
And on day one, I downloaded a $40 game for free.
Yeah.
So, well, actually two $40 games. And so, I mean, the money was made back. Now, I didn't actually spend the money, but the money was made back. So the game that I downloaded that I loved so much was at your recommendation was Saints Row the Third.
The Third. Oh, man. I already talked about this on the show a little bit before. The game is great.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. It's like when I played Grand Theft Auto a long time ago, there were so many things I wished it was. This is what I wished it was, I think. I don't think I knew that at the time. I felt like there should be more to this. This should be better. This is it.
Yeah.
Like this like is
GTA, man. That's what a great idea. That's, I mean, they're doing a lot of good stuff. Well, really good. But what, I mean, it feels like it's missing something. Oh, Saints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of this. So, I've been playing that a lot. And, you know, we like sometimes to talk about video games and how we might be able to incorporate something from a video game into a board game.
Yeah.
So I'd like to bring up a feature of the week here we can talk about.
Okay.
It's actually mostly a mechanic, and that is the idea of an open world. Now, we did talk about a sandbox idea.
We did a long time ago. Like, one of our earliest episodes.
Yeah, so I'm not really concerned about rehash because it was so long ago. And at that point, I hadn't really gotten to play any sandbox games in a very long time.
Yeah.
In Saints, I think, is unique in the way it works in some ways with the sandbox style, and so that just got me thinking again, what lessons can we learn from that and how can we apply that to board games? Can we find a way to come up with a truly open world board game? You know, board games inherently are limiting because it's a board game, card game. You have tools at your disposal. You have a small place to play those. And, you know, so, I mean, it's inherently limiting.
Mm-hmm.
Open world video games are inherently not limiting. Sure, there's an edge to the city. There's an edge to the game board and in those games. But that edge could be huge. Mm-hmm. And it may take you a very long time to get to that edge. So.
Yeah. So, now, a key thing to understand about an open world video game, though, is that it's not truly unlimited. It's just it presents an unlimited. It gives the player the impression of infinity, you know, of unlimited options. There are not unlimited options, of course, because human beings had to create that, had to design that, and make decisions and build rules and mechanics into that. So that's the key thing, that it presents. It gives you this impression of openness, of doing whatever you want.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of the key thing to the open world concept, I think, maybe. And now, of course, the easiest answer to this question, of course, is, well, role-playing games. You know?
Yeah, that's fair. You because know. Role-playing games truly are limitless, right? I mean,
yeah, you know, limited by your imagination.
Oh, which is huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
It's huge.
Yes. Right, and I agree with you. I mean, like, you know, for instance, Saints Row. I mean, there's only so many quests. There's only so many things you can buy. You could theoretically max out that game, right?
Yeah.
To where you've spent all the money, gotten all the respect. What'd you say?
I very nearly did finish 100% of it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, how do we create a board game that allows you to do that. Not a role-playing game. There's a board, or there's something to create a board with. I feel like a card game is an easier way to do it, mm-hmm. because there are so many more options with by putting in more decks and stuff. But let's call it a board game, because I think that I want a space you move in. You know, I want a space you move around in.
Trying to think of ways to approach that. Now, I mean, I think maybe to talk about it as a modular board, to give you truly unlimited options, you would want to be able to change out tiles, change out features of the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's kind of my first thought about that.
Right, I mean, I guess, so with a modular board where you've got, say, so 2-inch square tiles, right? 2-inch okay. square tiles, 18-inch board, we'll say. So okay. that'd be 9x9, right? So 9 times 9 is 81 tiles. Is that my math right? Yeah. So you've got 81 tiles. That seems like too many, but it's probably right.
Okay.
Carry the one, yeah.
I'm not even trying to do that math.
So you got 81 tiles, but let's make the game have 150 tiles, right? Let's go crazy.
All right, lots of options.
And let's also have the game come with a mat, a play mat.
Okay.
Or some sort of way to slide all the tiles, right? So if we got an 18x18 inch area, and my character, or my little peg or whatever, I move it to the edge, and I want to move past it, we now take up what was on the far right, mm-hmm. I'm on the left, right, and add another random row of tiles to the left.
Okay.
So it's like the game is moving with me. Does that make sense?
Okay.
In fact, to simplify that even more, oh, I kind of like this.
Okay.
What if when I enter a new tile, right, like, you know, Chevy was talking about on our video cast we did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we need to make sure we plug that at some point before the show is over.
Yeah, we'll plug it. Don't worry, guys. Yeah. Chevy was talking about, like, dungeon builders.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you flip a tile, you do something with the tile. Oh, I kind of like this.
Okay.
So let's say the game has something to do with being, like, in a dream world, right?
Okay.
Like maybe Inception style. I don't know. Something about a dreams.
Sure.
It's this board. Let's make it smaller than 18 by 18. Or no, let's not. Let's keep 18 by 18.
Just keep it huge.
Yeah, keep it huge. So when I'm in the center tile on the left, right, or the center tile. So the fifth one in from both sides. And I walk to the next thing. You place a new tile there, right? But then you remove that one tile on the opposite side.
Okay.
So as I make a path, the board is auto-adjusting as I'm doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening then is we're going to start cutting off areas of the board by doing that.
Every time you add a new row on the left, you lose a row on the right.
But you don't add a whole row. You only add the tile that I walk on. So if I just kept walking straight to the left, the board's just going to keep sliding.
So you're adding one tile in that direction, but you're losing a whole row.
No, you're just losing one.
Just losing one.
So eventually, I'm going to cut the board in half. You see it?
Not sure that I do.
Okay. So you've got 81 tiles, right?
Yeah.
So five down and five down. When I move, this tile right here goes away, and a new one is placed over here in the center.
Okay.
So now it's 1, 2, 3, 4, space, 1, 2, 3, 4.
On the opposite side of the board.
When I move again, now there's just two tiles sticking out on the left. But those first two rows are 1, 2, 3, 4, space, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. I'm worried about running out of room on my table when I'm playing that.
Right. That's why the board is never going to be... Oh, but it is slightly bigger. So maybe you start with a smaller board. Maybe like 5x5.
See, I think it might be better if you lose an entire row each time.
You're gonna run out of space. You're gonna run out of space real fast, though.
Well, that's why you push the rest of the tiles to the side.
Hmm.
Because I think I see where you're going with this. Like, you're exploring some kind of landscape or something here.
Well, and if it's like some sort of dreamscape, you're actually rebuilding it right. as you go.
And if you turn around and go the other direction, then the new tiles that you're placed on that side are going to be different than what you just threw away.
Exactly.
And it's okay that a new thing suddenly appears that was not there before.
Right.
And that's okay. Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah.
Man, that sounds like fun.
That sounds like, well, you know, that could be a really interesting solo game. You know?
That could be. But it also could be a game where you're either A, working together, or B, really trying to hose each other by yeah. making moves. I feel like there would have to be some sort of limiting factor, though, to stop you from just running left the whole time. The game breakers, right? Yeah. Oh, I'm not having fun. I'm just going to keep walking left, and I'm going to just ruin the board.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's either an action point system or something where you've got these kind of these mental points that allows you to create.
Okay, yeah.
So you can't just run
every
to
time
the
you
left.
Walk off the edge of the board. You have to spend a point,
right,
to build that on to add any tile, and then you have to do something on the tiles that are still there to gain more mental points back.
Right. Maybe you're all in a shared dream somehow, and you're fighting for control of the dream. And at each time, only one person can be the controller of the dream, right? So when I'm the controller, I can rebuild the landscape in certain places by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
No one else can. So you're fighting to be the controller, and I don't think it's just set. I don't think it's just a round robin of controller. I think you have to do something to be the controller, and actually building whether you're the controller makes it harder to continually be the controller. Because that's what you're putting your energy into.
Yeah.
So it gives other players an easier time
So this is basically Inception, the game, but whoever the architect is changes.
Kind of, yeah. Okay. That type of, I think it can capture that pretty well. You know, my other thought would be that if there were objectives on the board that are popping up, because it's random, right?
Yeah.
What's popping up. If there were objectives popping up on the board and you're there trying to get to them, so as the builder, you're trying to cut off areas. You're trying to make it so they can't get to certain areas
mm-hmm.
by creating gaps in the board.
What if sometimes, so the builder, let's say, or the architect, he or she, when they're taking that role, when they move the map to add a new tile, they might have three or four options revealed and they can choose which one to put down. But other people might occasionally be able to add on as well, but just take the top thing off, top tile off the stack, which is right. just at random.
Right. Yeah. Man, I feel like there could be a game there.
Could be something.
So the board size would be an issue, but if you just did a 5x5 board to start with, right?
Yeah.
And players could not, on any given turn, move more than one or two spaces. To really make it tight and limiting.
Yeah.
Heck, you could even make movement based on the... Oh, that might be kind of fun. So the standard movement is like X times number of tiles. Or X times the distance of the width, right? So, you know, if it's... Oh, man, that could be cool. X times would be a bad way to describe it. Just because it's basically one plus whenever you hit a certain threshold, now it's two. So when it's five tiles, it's two. When it's eight tiles across, you can now move two spaces instead of just one.
Oh, I see.
So as the board is getting more sprawling, you can do more.
Okay.
But no, so what I was saying was if it's 5x5, you're talking about 10x10 board, which is pretty small. You know, most tables are going to have room to do probably a 20x20 board.
Yeah.
Which means, you know, five in any direction. And you could say anytime an area is cut off completely, the smallest area that's been cut off is destroyed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm the builder and I keep running to the left and I'm trying to separate it and they cut me off somehow, you know, somebody takes control and cuts me off. They could kind of leave me stranded out there until I can gain control again.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm still not sure that I'm with you on this whole cutting off pieces idea.
Like, you can't visualize it?
Well, I'm not sure if that's the right choice. I think you might be better off, like, building walls to cut off things. Or if, rather than, you know, walking left to create a gap on the right, I think it might be more, make more sense as a builder, you can also just remove tiles.
Oh, like, you can remove a tile, but you have to put it somewhere. If you remove a tile, you have to put a new tile somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Hmm.
So that would be saying that the Dreamscape will always have X number of tiles. In this case, 5 times 5 is 25. But the layout of those tiles will start as a square and then will drastically change. So when I destroy a tile, a new one's going to appear wherever I choose.
Just has to be adjacent to a tile that's already on the table.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's going to be random what it is.
Yeah, what tile it is. So you pick where it goes, but you don't know what tile you're going to get. In that way, right. It's like Carcassonne. You pick where the tile goes, you just don't know
what tile
you're going to get.
But in Carcassonne, I assume you can't just randomly destroy tiles?
No, huh? Once it's there, it's there. So you would then be picking up tiles to get rid of them, to cut off sections of the table. So if somebody is stuck on that small island of tiles that you just cut off, what happens to them?
Once they're, you know, if either somebody throws them a bone, right, and gives them a connector, or if they're the builder, they can drop tile, you know what I mean? They can remove a tile from somewhere on the board and put it adjacent to them to help make a bridge.
Hmm.
I mean, what if you made it so that, you know, if they're fighting to be control of the builder, the person controlling the smallest amount of dream space or dreamscape has the greatest chance to be the builder, right? Because they're using the least amount of energy to focus on the dreamscape around them, because if they're just on one or two squares as a little island,
mm-hmm.
and everybody else is on the big thing, they're trying to, you know, does that make sense? I think that logically makes sense. Like, they can put all their effort into trying to take control of the dream.
Okay.
As for what the goal is, I feel like the goal would be cool if you were trying to acquire things within the dream. And maybe even, you know, if it was going to be a purely board game and you're just moving, trying to get to certain spaces on the board that correspond with what your specific goal is. You know, everyone has the same goal, or maybe, you know, there's a different color for each player and there's certain colors on the board that are popping up in different spots that you're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, it could be when you get to a certain spot, you are able to draw a card. You know, like you get to a spot and now you draw a card, and that maybe you're collecting a set somehow with that, you know, so.
Okay. Yeah, I think the next step with this would probably be to, you know, gosh, what would the next step? I mean, really, just start writing some stuff down and figuring out goals, figuring out other actions and abilities. That's a different idea, though, the way that
yeah. I mean, I think that's an open world scenario. Something.
Well, I think that's potentially the beginning of one.
Right.
Potentially the beginning. Yeah. Yeah.
The board is not limiting. You can make the board bigger. Now, as for can I just run around and do all sorts of stuff? Well, not if you want to win the game, but
yeah. I don't think you could ever make a true Grand Theft Auto clone as a board game.
And why would you, right?
Well, no, you wouldn't want to, I don't think, but...
Here's an interesting idea, though. So what if you're fighting for control of the dream, right?
Yeah.
And the dream has different emotions. Or maybe, like, there's dream, there's good dream, just to put labels on it. Good dream, okay dream, nightmare. And there's more than one stack of tiles. So when you remove a tile, you can choose what you want to put in there.
Hmm.
Or maybe maybe you can't choose. Maybe you grab the next one. Crap, it's a nightmare tile.
Maybe it's about area control. Maybe each player is trying to get their own type of dream in there. And you start with a base set, like a 3x3 set of neutral dream tiles. And then when on my turn, I'm trying to place nightmare tiles. On your turn, you're trying to place happy dream tiles. Maybe that's what it is.
And maybe the third player is trying to play sex dream tiles.
Sure. It's the theme of the show today with Kanzi Migatis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those tiles to sell the game will just have anime boobs on them. That's the plan.
Every tile is just a pair of boobs.
Yep.
Anime boobs.
Yeah.
It's fine. We can do that.
Good plan.
You can do that. Yeah.
We just sold 1 million copies.
We did. That's true.
The other ones all have miniatures on them.
Yeah.
Just for good measure.
Right. Okay. I think that's it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. I'm happy with that. Okay. I'm happy with that discussion.
See what you can do with it.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna take a shot at just seeing what it would take to lay something like that out.
Okay.
To make it semi-feasible.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that hard to make a prototype strategically wise of just making the tiles.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be cardstock, which would kind of stink, but what's cool is that would be an easy one to order off the Game Crafter, too.
Yeah.
Even if you were just ordering generic tiles to kind of give yourself an idea.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, I like it.
All right.
Okay. Well, hey. Hey, Jinx. Practicing the pitch time, and it's your turn to pitch a game.
Yes, it is.
What do you got?
Okay. I was all prepared with a game I was going to pitch, which was a game I had... So let's just plug something for nothing real quick, because I was about to say something else about it. I mentioned a National Treasure style idea game I had, and I was going to pitch that tonight. But so Something from Nothing is a video cast that we started doing. And right now we're still kind of playing with the format, deciding how we're going to do it every other week. But the plan is every other week, a few designers are going to get together and are going to talk through the games ideas they have right now, and talk through the problems they're having, and the other designers are going to try and help them out. And this first episode we did was great. It went really well. It was Rob and myself and Chevy Dodd and then TC Petty. And it was just a really good time. It's live streaming video. You can tweet us questions while we're doing it. In addition to that, you can watch it afterwards on YouTube. It automatically streams via YouTube and then is recorded on YouTube when we're done, and it posts out there. And then we post it on the BTG Co-op site a day or two later. My guess is those will probably post on Tuesdays, because the other ones post on Mondays. So yeah, it's really worth checking out though.
It was super fun.
If you liked our game designer panels that we had at Gen Con, where we just kind of sat in the room and talked, it's like that, but a bit more focused.
Yeah.
Less dead time for getting beer and stuff.
Yeah. No, it was super fun though. I had a really good time doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to doing that more often.
Me too.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, okay, so I was going to pitch that idea, and then today at work, I had this idea for a game. I was listening to some music. I was actually listening to the band Modest Mouse, and they have this song called Perpetual Motion Machine, and that got me thinking about Perpetual Motion Machines, and I was like, I should make a game called Perpetual Motion Machine. Well, that's already been done by Beezier Games, so bummer. But anyways... what Perpetual got me thinking of was, I was like, I want to have a mechanic that feels perpetual, right? So this game is not about perpetual motion machines. I'm just trying to tell you how I got there. I wanted a design technique that fit that, right? So I was trying to think of what could be a kind of perpetual feeling design that keeps going around. And that made me think of drafting. And now drafting, in a traditional sense, is you do a draft, then you play a round. And then you maybe do, you know, some games you do a draft and you're done with drafting. Other ones you do a draft once a round, like Citadels. I explored that before in my game Freaky Tiki had that. So you would do a draft and then you'd move on. But I thought, what if the draft is the game? Like, is that possible? Would that game be fun? Well, I don't know, but I think I designed that game. And when I say design, I mean rudimentarily. Like I said, I did come up with this today, but I really just wanted to be able to talk it out with you. And I told you that I had this idea, but we didn't really talk about it. We figured we'd get to talk about it for the first time tonight on the show, which is always fun. We don't always get to do that based on our recording schedule. So this game, the idea is you are scientists right now. This is what I'm thinking. You're scientists trying to create machines. And the thing about the machine you're trying to create is you have to create it in pieces, but every piece that you put on has to be its own standalone machine, right? So I put a couple pieces together and I've activated a machine. I've turned it on. Now, anything else that I want to build has to fit with that machine. So the machine is just going to keep growing and getting bigger and crazier and do more and more things. But it all has to attach to itself. Kind of like the chaining idea, right? The parts have to fit with each other. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Cool. So to get the pieces, I mean, to get these cards that you're going to be using to make the machines, you're going to do it draft style. You're going to start out with five cards, I think, five cards in a draft pile, and they're just going to get passed around, right? And whenever you want to draft a card, you have to pay the price of that card, right? To draft a card, you're trying to build your hand that you're going to be using, okay? And at first, you're not going to be able to do much with your hand because you really need to get more cards, right? So, but when you draft, you have to pay the price for the draft. That price may be you have to draw a card, and not look at it, just draw a card and put it into the draft hand, right? Does that make sense?
Okay.
So if I want to take this card out of the draft hand, that means I have to take a card off the top of the deck, put it in the draft, and pass it to the next person, right? The draft price may be put a card back into the draft. So a card from your hand. So I have a couple cards in my hand, right? And I want to take a card out of the draft, and the card says, if I'm going to take it, I have to give it a card back. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So people don't know what card you're taking, right? So I guess there's a bit of an honor system thing here. And I know there is with a lot of games, but probably this is a little heavier on the honor system than some games are. some people might not be okay with that, but... So the idea is once you have a full hand, and maybe you just start with a full hand to make it easier, that might actually make more sense. So you've got your full hand now, and then the game really gets into motion. You, as you're playing cards, you're getting cards, you're playing them out on the board. You don't have to every turn, it's just some turns, and it's free to put any cards down as long as they make a machine. And then after that, as long as they keep attaching, and your machine might say, draw one free card every turn, or take one free card from the draft every turn, right? Or maybe it allows you to look at cards before you put them into the draft. Because the idea is once you're seeing the machines that people are building, it says right on the cards what the next card they need is to be able to attach to that machine, right? There's like three parts options, say.
Okay, so each card has its own other... icons or something,
yeah.
So you can attach one of these two or one of these three different
right
types.
And, you know, this. It would show on there what machines it could make.
Okay.
So, yeah. So the idea is that you have to plop it together to make this machine. So I know, based on what you have out, what else you need to start building more. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to try and hose you, but I also want to try and help myself.
Hmm.
So whenever there's a card that I don't see in the draft that I have to just pick up to fulfill a slot into the draft, right? So here's another idea I had. Maybe this is a simpler way to handle it. Instead of having a cost-based system for how much it costs to draft a card, maybe it's just a straight trade. I can take one card out of the draft and put one card back in, right? So it's almost like a gin rummy style game where I draw a card and I can either place it face up or I can keep it and discard another card and put it face up, except for it goes into the draft. So not everyone's going to necessarily see it. If you are to the left of me and you take it, you're going to get that card before anyone else has it. Right. Nobody else will have seen that card, right?
Yeah.
If I choose to just take a card straight out of the draft, then I have to blind take a card and put it back into the deck. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, out of the deck into the draft.
So you have the option of either swapping one from your hand, or you take a card from the draft and add a blind one from the deck to the draft. So that would be, after you play cards down on the table, that would be how you replenish your hand.
Exactly.
Okay. I kind of like that.
So I just... And then actually, if you do it that way, you don't have to worry about the who's cheating thing, right?
Because, yeah, right.
And I'm not honestly worried about cheating. I'm worried about I didn't understand the rules, so I was cheating because I didn't understand the rules and I was doing it wrong. Just because that sucks for everybody, because then the person feels bad when they get caught.
So then maybe you're just trying to get certain point value out of your machine?
Or just a certain number of pieces, you know what I mean? Maybe that is a point value. That's a good point. Yeah, maybe you're trying to get a point value. And maybe each piece of the machine is worth a set number of points, right?
lower the point value, the more options you have for adding on to it. Higher the point value, the more restrictive it is.
And even negative. Maybe when you put that in play, it starts hurting you. You know what I mean? Like, oh, your hand size is now 4.
Or maybe if it's worth 5 points, you can't add anything at all onto that card. You have to build off of another card on your machine.
Right. Because, yeah, the idea is there'd be two ends on the machine to build from.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's not bad. And that could be kind of a simple thing mechanically to put together, you know?
Right.
Simple icons and points.
Right. The hardest thing would be trying to find the balance.
Yeah.
Of how many cards, which is always tough to know, right?
Right.
How many... how many of each thing to make it balanced. So you have the right connectors and the right percentages of connectors. I hate trying to balance stuff like that. Yeah.
So cards are worth 1 to 4 points. If it's worth 1 point, you can add on to any of the 4 sides. Or maybe you have four icons that you connect to either side of the card. If the card's worth 2 points, you only have 3 options to add on to either side. If it's worth 4 points... if it's worth 3 points, you only have 2 options to add on. If it's worth 4 points, you only have 1 option to add on. If it's worth 5 points, you can't add anything on. It just kills the end of that end of the machine.
Yeah.
You know?
That works, yeah.
That's simple, that's easy. So the higher the value, the tighter it's going to be.
Right. And you've got those kind of open connectors out. So everybody knows what you need to fulfill, especially as it gets tighter in the end of the game, if you're playing higher value things.
Or maybe even a 1 point card, it can allow you to have a third branch, build a third branch, you know, instead of just building off either side, you know, like in a straight line. If you put a card worth 1, maybe that's a 0 card.
Or even negative.
Or even negative, sure. Yeah. And that would allow you to build up instead of just cross.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if everybody kind of had a base card that was out that was worth 0 points, and it had 4 prongs, but that top and bottom prong were only going to connect to the really crappy cards. Basically the negative point cards. Yeah. So they can really hose you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
That might be fun.
Yeah, you should try and make that. I think that'd be a real simple thing to put together. Game ends when the deck runs out. Whoever has the most points is the winner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe make it, you could 50 card deck, you could do 60, 75 card deck, something like that, depending on, you know, how long you want the game to take. That would take testing.
Right.
But, you know, have the cards balanced so there's more 2s and 3s than 1s and 4s.
Right. Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. Yeah, maybe I'll give that a try. So, I really like the idea.
Yeah,
I like its simplicity, you know?
Yeah, and I like that it's not just draw a card, play a card. It's you might have 4 cards to draft from available to you. And sometimes you can trade, where sometimes you just have to throw something blindly in there to take something. You don't know what you're giving to the next guy.
Right.
That's a neat idea.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
That's what I got.
Good stuff. I like it. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up then for tonight. Thank you once again, everybody, for listening to the show. Really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, and we encourage that, if you want to enter our exciting Kanzumi Goddess contest, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also comment on our website at buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and give us likes. This is a reminder that we got to 100 likes, and there's a print and play for Potent Potions out there right now. If you can get us to 200 likes, then we'll get another print and play available out to you guys. That's our promise to you. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We love those, and we really appreciate those. You can also follow us on Twitter at @podcastbtg. Jason is at @JASlingerlin, and I am at @poorly_designed. And you can come and see us at Grand Con. We would love to meet you guys and shake your hands and hang out. And anything else?
I think you covered it.
Okay, then we're in good shape. Thank you once again for hanging out with us, guys. Good night.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
I'm top, you're bottom on there, so.
Huh? I'm bottom. I don't want you to be the top.